episode 16, Fundamentally Sound Podcast. You have Ben Brust here and Bobby Regan, Barstool Regs, in the basement, basement blogger. I love everything about it.
Officially a basement blogger.
I mean, I love it. You just posted an Instagram that you may never leave from the basement again. And when I come for our event at Queen City, I may not leave either.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate man cave.
There's a bathroom down here, too.
That's important.
And I'm putting a fridge in here. So really all I need is eventually like a microwave and I'm good.
No, you need I don't know how this maybe has been invented or not, but you need the Lazy Boy like chair that you can just shit into.
Yeah.
And never move.
Well, but I have a bathroom. So I mean I can go to the bathroom's right by the bar.
Yeah, but you still gotta get out of your chair.
But I'm not at the bar.
Fair enough. Okay, you found a good reason. If you didn't have to go to the bar, I'd say you need that. It's a must-have.
Right. And then, I mean, I have windows, so I get sunlight.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty excited here. We have one of my good buddies, Rick Carter, joined the show, and we'll bring him on in about 10, 15 minutes. But Rick was at Western Michigan back – he was an assistant there – when was it? 2007. So I was like a sophomore, going to be a junior. And that's really when
So was I in college.
Yeah, in college. So that was when I was coming onto the scene for recruiting. I had a huge game in front of all the college coaches about when you get all the mid-major offers. You don't get a barrage of high-major offers when you're a 6'1 white guy. You get all the barrage of mid-major offers. And Rick knew he couldn't get me. Called me anyways. We've literally stayed friends ever since. That's the type of guy he is. But was a grad assistant at Michigan State. I believe he coached Drew Neitzel's AAU team, which is kind of a fun fact. And we could get a little more info on that. Went to Fairfield, went to Western Michigan, then to Mizzou. I believe he was on the team where they lost as a 2-seed. He was one of the coaches there. Ironically, was an assistant coach for two guys I played overseas with, and Mike Dixon and Alex Oriaki. Then went to Xavier under Chris Mack. Went back to work with Dave Lato, who was an assistant with Dave Lato at Mizzou, I think.
No, he would have been with Frank Haith in Missouri.
In Missouri. Yeah, Mizzou.
Right. Frank Haith was the head coach. Or are you saying Lato was
– Lato was the assistant with
him. Okay. I thought you were saying that as in –
No.
I thought the way you phrased it.
I probably said – yeah, I phrased it like that. Went to Mizzou, then to Xavier under Chris Mack. Reunited with Lato at DePaul and kind of just had a little bit of a thing go down where the head coach is told from the administration all of that where you got to let go of your staff. And Rick is the ultimate players coach, so we'll let him fill us all in on that. Great guy. She'll have plenty of stories. He currently has his own company called Spotter EDU. So you put these beacons in classrooms where you know that your student athletes are going to be in, and they can track when your student athletes are in class and out of class by like your cell phones connected to the beacons. So like it's some crazy stuff. It's pretty cool technology. That's what he's doing now. I'm sure he'll land on his feet if he wants to get another job in coaching. But there's my Rick Carter introduction for people who may not know him. But I think it's going to be a really, really interesting interview because he's got experience on the recruiting side. He's got experience on the coaching side. He's just an all-around good dude, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect timing. We'll get into this a little bit later. We'll knock out our stuff first, but it was important getting Rick on now because we're recording here Tuesday night. The July live period starts Wednesday. So it's perfect timing, especially for like Peach Jam and all that. So we'll save that for Rick. We need to get back into finishing up what we were talking about last week, though. First off, we got to shout out a couple people.
Yeah. We got to shout out the 16s of the world.
Yeah, episode 16. So it's a little weird one. We're away from college at this point.
Regardless of the fact that we have people, 16 is just a shitty number.
It's a terrible number.
It's terrible.
For any sport. I don't care what sport you play. 16 is a shitty number.
Yeah, it's just so irrelevant. It's irrelevant on the roulette table. It's irrelevant in baseball numbers, basketball numbers. soccer numbers.
Yeah, it's a terrible number.
It's a terrible quarterback number who wears 16.
Right, like it's just not a good number.
It's just a bad number. Yeah. So go ahead, you start us off.
I love this team. Back in the day, I love what they're doing now. Part of the reason why they were so good back in the day, Peja Stojakovic.
I respect that one.
That dude was good.
He was good. He could shoot the shit out of it. He could ball. And he's a shooter, so of course I'm going to like that.
Right. Limited options with 16.
And when I refer to a lot of these players, I'm not going to say he was good in 2K because NBA Live was that game back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I played – I had an NBA Live back in – what would that have been? PS1 days? Maybe PS2 days?
PS2 probably.
Yeah. And then went to 2K. Well, no, because we were 2K in college. 2K overtook Live when, like, 08, say, it might have been PS3. I'm trying to remember what came out when. But, yeah, when Live in its heyday, like, 02, I'd fuck around with NBA Live.
Yeah, my favorite NBA Live team of all time, Seattle Supersonics. Luke Ritenour at point guard, Ray Allen at the 2, and Rashard Lewis at the 3.
That's a good one.
Buckets City Central. And there was a four-man who could step out and shoot, too, and I'm blanking.
The Celtics were actually really good back in the Live days because they had Tony Delk, Walker, McCarty, who could play the 4 or 5 step-out shoot. You had Walker, Pierce. So you had four, like, same type of thing. They were always pretty fun to play with back in the day in Live.
Who was was Ray Florence on that team, maybe?
I don't remember.
It was like a big European lefty shooter at the 4 spot.
For the Sonics?
Yeah, no, I'm going to look that team up after this. But I totally just thought of a Twitter poll. Like best throwback NBA Live team to play with. Because nowadays, like, you could just be like, oh, it's fun to play with the Warriors or the – like the super teams obviously are the most fun. I think it's fun to go back and, like, look at who are your favorite teams to play with back in the day.
Right, right. All right, so who's your 16 that you're throwing out?
Gosh, I hate that I have to pick one.
You have to pick one.
By the way, it was slim pickings.
It was slim pickings.
I'm going to do an honorable mention after. And this goes against a lot of what I believe in because being a Wisconsin guy, it's not that I hate Marquette, but I do hate Marquette. You know what I mean?
Right.
I have to, and I do hate them.
I almost picked this guy, too.
Steve Novak.
Yeah.
Just because of his epic run.
Former New York Knick great Steve Novak.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because of his epic run in New York, literally, like,
he was really good. He was really good shooting. He was really shitty at everything else.
He was burning the lights out. That was D'Antoni days, right?
No, that was Mike Woodson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was
on that team. Imagine if he was on D'Antoni days.
He was on that team when they were the 2 seed.
Honorable mention. God bless you, Riggs.
Thank you.
Paul Zipser. Yeah. I got to throw in one of those every time.
Yeah, I tried finding a random one. I almost went with, like, there was some just terrible ones. Let's move on because 16 sucked.
16 sucks.
All right. If you guys remember last episode, we were starting to talk about – we talked a lot about the shift of power in the NBA to the West – and kind of everything going on with free agency and what it meant in terms of who's now good, who's now average, who's what. Ben threw out the idea of coming up with our power rankings, top 10 teams in the NBA. So I'm going to go with mine in order. No-brainer with the top two. Warriors, Cavs, 1 and 2. We both agree on that.
Yes.
I have Rockets, 3.
I do, too.
Okay. I have Spurs 4, Thunder 5.
I do not.
Celtics 6, Wolves 7, Grizzlies 8, Wizards 9, Pelicans 10.
Okay. So top 3 are the same.
Top 3 are the same.
My 4th are the Thunder. Just because what Russell Westbrook was able to do pretty much by himself last year.
Yeah, I really debated where to put them. Like the Rockets, Spurs, and Thunder, I didn't know kind of how to put them 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, you're going to be shocked at after my 4th. I'm a buyer of the Celtics. I know that they don't have any rebounding, and I know that that is a big factor, but I think and hope that they have draft picks and they'll trade and do something to fill that gap.
Yeah, I can't put them over the Spurs.
You can't. I get it. For some reason, I'm selling the Spurs this year. I'm just selling the Spurs here. I don't think Aldridge is as good, and he's aging, and he's just getting older. Tony Parker's aging. I'm just selling right now. I know it's the Spurs. I know it's a system. It's kind of like a Wisconsin thing. Like, they're always good. They're always going to compete, all that. They have the system.
Derek White's going to come in and fill in just fine.
I'm selling. I got the Wolves at 7. The Wizards at 8. The Raptors at 9. And Fear the Deer at 10.
My initial reaction is you have way too many Eastern Conference.
East teams. I know. I thought of that.
You have you're 5-5, aren't you? Yeah, you're the Bucks, Raptors, Wizards, Celtics. Yeah, you're 5-5. You're insane.
I'm insane.
You were drunk.
No, I'm not. And here's why I say that. It's so top heavy in the West that some East teams like the Wizards and the Raptors or the Bucks are gonna just end up being good enough because it's so lopsided to fit into the top of the power.
I'm not buying into, like, records don't mean you're a better team.
I hear you. I'm just saying they're going to – like, what happens in these situations is because you play such shitty competition, you just become confident that you're actually good, and then you beat some teams that you should.
Yeah.
Just my theory.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably still take, like, the Blazers –
I don't get your Nuggets. Grizzlies one.
I'd probably put those two over.
You really had the Grizzlies in there a little higher than I was just very surprised with Zach Randolph. He is like a staple to that program.
Yeah, but
program.
He wasn't. I mean,
I know he, but it's just one of those things where it's like
it's still Mike Conley, it's still Marc Gasol, it's still I still trust the Grizzlies. Like, they still have stars. They still have a couple stars. I'm fine with the Grizzlies. I think they're going to kind of slide into, like, that sixth seed in the West.
Fair enough. And it's just different philosophies that we have. That's all.
Right. And then the Pelicans, same thing. I'm counting on a healthy year of Davis and Cousins together and a healthy Drew Holiday.
I'm intrigued by that one, but as we've talked about, I'm still selling the Davis-Boogie combo until further notice.
Right. So – again, our list, I have Warriors, Cavs, Rockets, Spurs, Thunder, Celtics, Wolves, Grizzlies, Wizards, Pelicans, and Ben has Warriors, Cavs, Rockets, Thunder, Celtics, Spurs, Wolves, Wizards, Raptors, Bucks. Were there any surprises when you looked at my list? Because we have a little Google Drive share that Ben and I do where we'll fill stuff out.
No. You're supposed to tell people we have a database.
We do have a database. Our database is Google and texting each other.
And
were there
shitty
any surprises
and
when you saw it?
My surprise is, like I said,
you saw my list up first.
I guess I did. And I don't know. My surprises, like I said, were the Grizzlies. And I wasn't like, and I know how you think, and I know what teams you like, and I know what combination. Like, we've talked about the Pelicans. Obviously, we've talked about the top 7. So there's really nothing to be surprised about. Right. And you and I are both buyers on John Wall and Bradley Beal and the Wizards. So no surprises on yours. I went for a little bit of a different. Like, I'm just trying to be a little different here. The whole media, the whole people, all the NBA fans.
Sponsors in Wisconsin with the Bucks. I understand you.
Well, no, I really think they have a chance.
No, this is where you say yes. This is how we get sponsors.
Well, yes. Yes. yeah, offline conversation as well. I have to tell you something on that.
Cool.
But before we get Rick on.
We got to talk about Mo Bamba.
We can talk about Mo Bamba, but I want to talk about something else first.
All right.
Because – and this is what I don't like. This is only my only least favorite part about bringing guests on. Is I feel like I have to talk faster and fit more things into our 15-20 minutes together. It totally does. The home run derby last night was absolutely ridiculous. I loved every second of it.
I was watching Summer League basketball.
Yeah, I'm sure you were.
I didn't feel like watching the home run. I was following along with it and, like, had it, like, secondary. And I watched, like, when Judge came on, I watched things like that. But that was my secondary.
Yeah, that's why you need that second TV to come in, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
And that's a perfect example for Reegs of what you would be doing. I would be opposite. just like truthfully, I would be so opposite. I would have Summer League on TV too, in which I'm totally not utilizing my TV in my bedroom. It looks really good, you know, for aesthetics. Like, oh, you have this big TV. It's connected to Xfinity. I think I've watched it like 3 times in the last 8 months.
I have the TV on. All right, let's focus on what we're talking about. We're
going to
go off.
Yeah, no. I'm going back to it. Home Run Derby. Everyone listening will agree. Your guy that you introduced me to on Twitter, Eric, the most correctly accurate tweet ever. All I heard the whole time was, woo! Oh, my goodness! Woo! Oh, my God! The announcers were so bad. It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I switched to the Spanish version just because it was really fun. No.
Yeah. I mean, you put anything in Spanish, it sounds so much better. Like goal calls, like any big time celebration call, it's always better in Spanish.
Yeah, back. Right. I missed it. No, that was English, actually. Believe it or not, that was Berman. Back. I know you thought that was not English, but it was.
It was English. It was.
So go back on Mo Bamba. I wanted to get that in.
Yeah, because this is a crazy story that finished correctly. So Mo Bamba, he's a top 10 prospect in the class of 2017 going to Texas. He's going to be a top 5 pick. Big guy from the Philadelphia, New York area. He played for PSA. He's from New York. He played for PSA. Cardinals in the EYBL, and you play for Westtown High School. Going to Texas, like I said, about 2 weeks ago, his brother had just like this 22-minute Facebook video, shirtless by a pool, like saying he's exposing Mo Bamba, that he had this illegal relationship with a guy who's Mo Bamba's mentor. And essentially that he received $200 cash weekly, a king-size bed, various trips, the whole works in terms of recruiting violations. The NCAA came out today and said that he was clear that his relationship with Greer Love, who is the mentor of Mo Bamba, was checked out fine even after this video surfaced. You find out that Mo Bamba's brother originally planned on enrolling at whatever school Bamba went to get his master's degree and eventually become an agent for him in the NBA. Wisely, Mo Bamba said no to that, which caused this. Are you shocked the NCAA got this ruling right? Because I was, and how quickly they got it right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked they moved as quickly as they did, just because they're a PR nightmare as it is.
Right.
So they have to get every decision that they make moving forward right from this point forward, just because of the UNC stuff, because of Syracuse, and because of everything that goes on with social media and the handlers and the money and the boosters. If there's money involved with amateurs that are going to be pros, they should take their time. So I was very shocked that they came out so quickly. Weird story. Just a weird developing story.
Just goes to show you, like, there are some shitty ass people in the world.
Like, yeah, if you're listening to this and just heard that for the first time, it's true.
But I mean, so you're someone that has obviously brothers, as do I. Could you ever imagine being in that situation? Like,
no.
Every situation is just so different.
It's so unique and different for sure. But like,
but the putting yourself from, A, I trust my brother to be my agent, to, oh, he's just going to screw me in the end.
I don't know. I'm trying to put – like, this is one of those situations, to be completely honest, where like, hey, Ben, you're the player perspective guy.
Right. It's not even that. It's just more of like
– but you know what I mean? Put yourself in their shoes. Right. Like, what would you do? And I'm like, man, I don't even know what to say on this one. This one's like so outside the box to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm just more shocked at how right the NCAA got this. And I'm glad, because Mo Bamba deserves to play.
And here's the thing. He's going to be good for the NCAA, and I bet that's how they looked at it in terms of how they always look at it. Yeah.
Probably, because like, he's a super smart kid.
He's a super super smart kid, but he's going to make them revenue because he's going to
– Yep.
And that's how they look at it, end of day.
He's going to market too, because he's going to be a top 5, top 10 pick. He's going to be – you know, he has all the academic backing and has some crazy stories from an academic standpoint of things that he's done. Like, he's a really, really bright kid. So he's easy to market for the NCAA. I mean, it's the best thing for him when you're a good student and a better athlete, especially in basketball or football.
Yeah, I almost, like, I challenge somebody to come up with a way that they would have handled it that would have pleased everyone in the end.
I think this is it. Like, this is the way it pleases everybody. Who's upset with this decision?
Well, nobody, except... Right. I don't know, except people who really, really, like, want to see the NCAA go down.
Yeah, well, that or people that, like, fans of, like, you know, Kentucky or Duke or something like that where Bamba said no to.
All right, Rick just texted me. He's getting impatient. Let's get him on.
Again, Rick Carter, former assistant head coaches with stops at Fairfield, Western Michigan, Missouri, Xavier DePaul, former grad assistant at Michigan State. This is going to be his interview coming at you here. So, again, Rick Carter. All right, as we mentioned, we have Rick Carter on the show today. Rick, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Thanks for coming on. Obviously, it's getting ready to be a kind of crazy time in the college basketball world. So that's why we wanted to bring you on, talk a little bit about the recruiting world. July period kicks off tomorrow. Peach Jam kicks off tomorrow.
Pretty good, too, because Fred Hoiberg just came out and said was, quote-unquote, fucking hated recruiting.
That was the exact line.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how you feel about that, Rick. Just start us off. What do you think about recruiting?
Well, no, it's crazy because, Ben, I think you can relate to it as a player, and you know what kind of goes into July. Like, kids put so much into it, and they act like complete idiots half the time on the court. And as a coach, you got to fly all over the country, and you got to evaluate these guys in a setting where – it probably always isn't conducive or fair to them. And they're all trying to do too much. Like, everyone wants to prove the fact that they can score, score, score. And that's the last thing that you want to see. So, yeah, it's terrible. It's literally the worst time of year.
That's a good point, though. Like, I've always thought about that. And when people ask me for recruiting advice, like, hey, how did you get noticed? I always tell people, do something different. Get an offensive rebound put back. Take a charge. Like, you have to be different. Otherwise, you'll just look like the guy who's trying to get buckets, and that's not going to stand out if you want to land at the right program. Not at a program, but the right program.
For sure, because I think all of us know in July, everyone's going to be able to score the ball. Like, if I go watch them in their high school, they're going to average 25, 26, whatever. But when you go to college, you got to fit in with the team. So going there and watching a guy, like you just said, Ben, go get an offensive rebound. Heaven forbid you talk on defense. Like, that actually might get you noticed. You know what I mean? Like, because you'd be the only one talking on the court because none of the dudes ever talk. You know, so, like, little things like that, you're right. They 100% go a long way. And I do think the old adage that when you're off the court, you're always being evaluated. Like, no matter what's going on, like, you could be walking to your car. You could be talking to your mom and dad. Like, you could be going to get a cup of water. But as a coach, you're evaluating those kids 100% of the time.
So how weird is that with the July period where – you know, coaches get ushered in on one side of the gym, players and parents are ushered on the other side of the gym, and you can't officially talk to the player and their families? Is that the rule, right, during this?
Essentially, now you can have pleasantries. So you can say what's up, hi, but you can't recruit at all, and you're not supposed to go out of your way to have that happen. So 100% what July is a big violation. It's every coach, like, you know, whether you go to a restaurant, whether you're walking to your car, like, you're always in the airport, the flight you take out there, like, you're always going to be bumping into people the entire time. But yes, the correct rule is you can have pleasantries now.
It's okay. So who, like, I guess before they changed the rule or the pleasantries wasn't allowed, were there certain people that coaches would try to talk to during this July period as to circumvent the rule?
I mean, the kid can always haul you. So okay. You could always have a kid reach out to you and talk to you that way. You know, like, I think at the end of the day, you're always trying to position yourself in a position where they can see you. Like, you're a big advertisement, you're a big billboard. So, like, that's where probably more bumps happen than anything else is, again, walking out to your car, you know, staying in the same hotel as a team that you're recruiting a kid off of, things of that nature, just to put yourself in a position where maybe you're on the elevator when they're going to their room and you have to talk. It's not uncomfortable that way.
So right. It's like, it's almost like you got to be a professional stalker in a way.
Hey, if you really think about it, you are. Honestly,
yeah,
it's six.
No, like you want to land at the hotel bar the same time that the parents you're recruiting their kid at the same time. So you like, how is that not considered pleasantries? Having a drink at the bar and running into some people and talking to them.
Yeah, no question. I don't even know how you differentiate any of that stuff. It's like, it makes it really difficult, but it's weird for me because I was on both sides of it. I was an AAU coach to start, and then I was a college coach recruiting. And I hated the July period as a coach because you knew the first two games or three games that you were going to play, you weren't going to have your real team because they were playing in front of college coaches for the first time. So that goes back to what I was saying before. As a college coach recruiting, it's terrible because you know those first two, three, four games that you're watching, those kids are just not being who they really are. And that makes it difficult.
So which one would you rather be?
Well, a college coach, you make more money. You know, come on. Like, I was getting paid a lot of money to sit there and watch games. It was great. It was phenomenal.
How far out in advance do you, when you're recruiting a kid or recruiting kids, how far out in advance do you kind of plan out the schedule?
Well, you try to plan it out, I mean, as far out as you possibly can. But, I mean, as Ben can talk about, like, nowadays – kids move teams so frequently
right.
that you're literally a stoplight away or a kid's decision away from everything being changed. So, you know, we would try to map out hour by hour where each coach was going to be in that first cycle in the first 5 days. But all it takes is, again, your head coach or someone to miss one game and you just scrap the whole plan.
Yeah, dude, Rick. So you keep saying like Ben can tell you, think about this. Like when you first started recruiting me was 10 years ago in 2007. So, like, it has changed completely since you were, like, since I was in the recruiting process.
I don't think it's changed as much as you would think. You're right. Just because of, like,
the kids bouncing back and forth and, like, changing teams. Yeah. And there's, Adidas and Under Armour teams and all that shit I have no idea about.
Oh, it's fucking wild. And it's literally, it could be.
It's politics and it's nonsense. It's crazy.
Well, and it's also, I mean, again, God bless them because they're doing what's right by their kid. But parents are absolutely crazy. And they all look at it as more, they're more of a business than anyone else. So it totally, like, changes their realm. Because, again, if the kid doesn't play as much, if he doesn't start, oh, we got to move teams. We got to send him somewhere else. And it's just wild.
Do you think that type of situation hurts the kid? I think it does, in my opinion. Because you can start seeing the trend of who are the psychos.
Absolutely. And you know what you can start seeing? Who's going to transfer?
Yeah.
Ah.
Like, if you've played on five different AAU teams, obviously something's fucked up somewhere. And you keep jumping around all over the place. So it's either, you know what, I'm wrong. It's probably the four other coaches that you played for. It was their fault because you didn't play. But then again, that all comes from parents. You know what I mean? So yeah, you're right. You can start seeing that trend early.
Yeah, it is kind of funny, like you said, Ben, back in the day. I mean, you were in 07. I'm even older than you. Like, when I was playing AAU, it was 03, 04. And you knew who you were going to play. Like, you know, when you played a certain team, you knew what to expect. It was these guys. You know, you'd scout them the first day we were there. Okay, here's who we're matched up against in our pool.
Different now, yeah.
Right, like, if you're playing the Atlanta Celtics, it's the Atlanta Celtics team you see from day one, not the one that shows up on, you know, playoff Saturday.
No question. Yeah, and then the EYBL has changed things so much, just in a sense that
that's what I wanted to ask really next can't. Was about the EYBL. I mean, that thing's taken off the last what three to 5 years, really.
Yeah, honestly, Nike's done a great job. I mean, in my opinion, it's by far the best AAU circuit that there is out there because things matter. You know, if you don't win, you don't make Peach Jam. But also, if you don't win, you're not getting your contract renewed. They'll bring in a whole other group, a whole other team. So it's really competitive, and the way they do it is very professional. Like, the coaches have to dress up. You know, it's not just your normal ragtag AAU ball. And Under Armour and Adidas have both kind of copied it. You know, Adidas has the gauntlet. I forget what Under Armour series is called, but they've done the same thing. And obviously, it's more of a team setting. It's more like everything matters. You know, the first game of the first weekend counts just as much as the last one.
Yeah, and that's so great. That's what you want. If you create some sort of, like, hierarchy system where you have to win to be in the best tournaments, that's going to create better, like, team basketball because you have to win. It's not just going to create, like, there's always going to be those guys who go for the buckets, but the more you can create an atmosphere where, like, we're winning gets you in front of the right coaches and the right,
exactly,
you know, programs, that's what you want.
And, you know, honestly, the whole Peach Jam concept, you know what I mean, putting all those great teams in one place that every college coach in America is at. So, yeah, for sure, Ben, you're right.
That's the best event. I sans, like, the high school level, the AAU level. Beach Jam's the best event out there still, correct?
I mean, I would say so. I mean, the thing that used to be the best, and this is when I was coaching AAU, is Sonny Vaccaro had the Adidas Big Time.
Yeah.
And it was 400 teams all in these high schools in Vegas, and it was great. You know, the one thing that I think AAU is missing is they should do a battle for the brands, and literally the last weekend get, like, the two best teams from whatever Peach Jam, you know, the runner-up and the whoever won it, put them all in one tournament out in Vegas to let them play to see who the best team of all the brands is. Because you never get that crossover. It'd be cool to see people play.
That's a good idea.
I do like that.
Now that you're unemployed, you can put that together.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, do like an 8-team tournament of the Under Armour.
It'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, UIBL and the Gauntlet. That would actually be really good. I tell you what, college coaches would like it. You know where to go for recruiting one weekend.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, that time of year, you guys don't have to watch NBA Summer League, right? We can put something else on TV.
Yeah. Although, the one nice thing about Summer League is you can get that. That's what the hell that guy's doing this day.
Good call. Who have you been most impressed with in the Summer League?
Donovan Mitchell, hands down.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell with John Collins right behind him.
Oh, so we're back live
Technically, my computer just decided to go fucking nuts and just started beeping at me. So, we'll see.
Why are you guys talking into drones? I'm really confused on these things. Like these little balls that you have in your hands. Like, what's going on? I feel like if this is an episode of Star Wars. Like, you guys talking to these things that look like R2-D2's brother.
They're just little microphones. It's supposed to help, like, us come clear.
Little. It's bigger than Ben's head.
He does have the big one.
I just see like a pair of Beats on the side of this microphone. It looks great.
Dude, you got to stop, Rick. I hate you so much, man. Oh, goodness. We're back. Fundamentally Sound 16.
But yeah, most impressed Summer League, Donovan Mitchell, John Collins. Mostly because John Collins is now stepping away and not just – like Wake Forest, they just run that kind of weave up out front with the guards and bring Collins up on the side for that side pick and roll and then just either dump it to him on the pick and roll or wait for him to post up.
I'm going to pick somebody who is not a rookie. And he obviously had a pretty good year at the Celtics. I've thoroughly enjoyed watching Jaylen Brown play and just like having like an all-around type game. I've really enjoyed watching him play.
And you would think that a guy who played like him, but there's so many other guys on other teams, like you'd think they would go out there and just dominate it. Jason Tatum, to me, has been by far the best rookie, I think. He's so good. And
The only thing that hesitates me to say that is how much Mitchell locked him down when Utah played Boston in the Utah Summer League. Like Mitchell just completely locked him down.
Yeah, that's one game. Overall work, he's still probably playing the best. But I will say this, and I texted you about this, Riggs, as Rick made a joke about the Bulls. It kind of made me laugh. I was like, oh yeah, at least they're tanking. But like, if you're tanking and rebuilding. A guy like Dennis Smith, dude.
I don't want to hear it. I'm a Knicks fan, man.
I know, but we had a pick before you. We could have took him.
At least took Markkanen. We took a guy for the fucking triangle, and the triangle's not even there anymore.
No. Listen, you picked like four spots after us.
We're two behind
and
you picked seven. We picked eight.
That's right. We picked a guy who disappeared in the second round of an NCAA tournament game. That's what was my problem. You can't rebuild a franchise and pick a guy and trade Jimmy Butler and then end up with the guy as your first pick who's going to be at best a decent role player in the NBA. Mark my
word. And watching him play like I watched him today, like can he shoot threes? Like that was going to be his deal. It was like he can stretch to the floor and he's wide open and he refuses to shoot it. Like, dude, that's your job. You better jack that fucker up.
He was 0 for 10.
And then he drove it and he shot a layup off the backboard. It didn't hit rim. It's like, what is going on, bro?
Hey,
this is my point.
At least the Bulls rookie's on the floor. Frank Nicotine is injured with knees and a knee injury and can't even get on the floor.
Nicotine. That's what happens when you get drafted and then you travel right back to play in a playoff.
He had to go that night and sit on the bench. He doesn't start or play. That's good. Phil Jackson does wonders.
Awesome. He's awesome. Let me tell you. Him and James Dolan and Steve Mills, like, been ruining my life for the last 30 years.
Yeah, the Bulls are going to be interesting this year. It'll be interesting to see how all that works out.
And by the way, Reeves, when we were saying who's going to suck in the NBA, we forgot about the Bulls.
Yeah, the Bulls are going to be bad.
Yeah, we failed to mention that because they're going to get D-Wade out of there at some point for a buyout on that contract, if possible.
Send him to Houston. Get
the Michael Porter sweepstakes.
Is that okay? Do you think he's the most talented player in college basketball this year, from an NBA standpoint?
Yes. Yeah. So it's interesting for me because when I was at Missouri as an assistant, his dad was on the women's staff, and they're homeschooled, and their whole family would come up and be in the gym or use our weight room and stuff like that all the time. So, like, to watch his development, not just as a player but as a human, like, it's been remarkable. He's by far the best player. Like, of all the kids that I saw in that class last year, Tatum, that kind of player, you know, like, he can make and take really tough shots. He's athletic. He can handle it. He can shoot it. There's not too many things he can't do. So I would be hard pressed to see someone better than him.
Did you get to see DeAndre Ayton play a bit?
I did.
Because he kind of seems like an unknown for more of the casual fan. What's kind of your take on him? Because obviously he's getting thrown around as number one in some rankings, and you know, you look at mock drafts and everything like that, he's a top three pick. What kind of guy can Ayton be at Arizona?
I mean, it's good to see that dominant big guys are coming back, because we hadn't really had a class like that in a while. And there's a couple of them in that class that come on, just flat out dominate the game because of their athleticism, their size, but more importantly, like, their length. Like, you're starting to see dudes that, again, that are 7 feet tall or 6'11 with 7'4 wingspans, but are now mobile and agile and can move. So I would say he's probably going to dominate out there. And plus, the thing about Sean Miller is his number one recruit in the last five recruiting classes has always been a one-and-done player, and he always highlights him. That's how he continues to get him when he recruits him. So the kid's going to get the ball. They're going to run stuff for him. So, yeah, he'll probably have a pretty good year.
You think that'll be weird with, like, Alonzo Trier still there? Like, for Trier to kind of – and we saw what happened when they played Xavier this year, and Trier kind of took over.
For sure.
Do you think he can fit a second fiddle to Ayton?
I mean, I don't think a guard ever has to be the second fiddle just because the coach calls the play, but he still has the ball in his hands.
Right.
So I think Trier's going to find ways to get his.
It makes sense.
Ben, what do you think about that? Like, the best bigs you played with, you still had to get them the ball.
Yeah, it's in the guard's hands at all time. I mean, I go back, even if you're not a big guy, I even go to my situation as a guy who played off the ball. I mean, there's times where I was frustrated because the point guard had the ball. No matter what the play was that was called, you're still barking at the guy or trying to throw your hands up or woo or whatever you got to say to try and get the ball to you, because the guards have the ball. It's a guard dominant game in college basketball. Even if there's a big class of big guys coming in, it's always college basketball will always be like guard dominant.
And that's why you rebounded so well, because you always want to touch the ball. So at least, you know, you went and got some boards, right, Ben? You were good.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you were a great rebounder. That's what you did different.
Well, five double-doubles as a 6'1 guy ain't bad. But here's what happens in the Wisconsin system. You sit in the corner as a two guy, and you got to create your own offense.
This is one of my favorite things. This is what I love former players when they go about the system. Let me tell you about this system. Like, so
dude,
I like it.
If some former player has any right to talk about a system, it should be a Wisconsin player, dude.
I don't know if Virginia players could chime in with Tony Bennett's system.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, both of our systems matched up my senior year when we were out at Virginia. We won like 44-37.
Yeah, I would have hammered the line in that game could have been like 64, and I would have taken the under.
Dude, it was probably like 105, and we're under by 30 points, which is crazy.
That's
awesome.
Wild.
Awesome game. And it's not like the teams are for a lack of talent. Malcolm Brogdon, Justin Anderson, Parentes, Toby. Anthony Gill. They were good teams. Really good teams. And it was 44-37. Love it. Love it. Rick.
Yes.
Because, of course, the show wouldn't be a show if I didn't try and make it about myself as much as possible.
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
I want a Ben story, good and bad. It can be when you recruited me. It can be when we've gone out as idiots in Chicago. I also want, after we go me, we can go recruiting. I just want Rick story time. You're crazy. You tell good stories. You're perfect for this podcast. Good change of pace.
So, like, the way that I noticed you playing, obviously, as I was walking into the Joya game, and I'll never forget this play. Literally, he got an advanced up. It was the right wing. He ripped the ball and went up and just dunked it. Like, just punched it on this team. And it was like a really athletic game. Like there was a lot of athletes out on the court and the whole place like went crazy. And it was literally as I was walking in. And I mean, Ben, you said it before, like, how do you get noticed? Like you got to do something differently. And that's how kind of I noticed who Ben was. And from that point forward, I think our relationship was just different because I really enjoyed who he was as a person and as a player, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to get him at Western Michigan. So I think the lowest point I've ever heard or seen you at was your freshman year at Wisconsin. And I mean, my phone rings and it's like 3 a.m. and I answer the phone and this dude's just in shambles. Like he's just done. Like he has no idea. Oh my God, this is terrible. Like, and it's the system. And every college freshman goes through it. Like wherever they go, however you are recruited, you always get sold a whole bunch of bullshit. It is what it is. Like when you get there, there's a lot of things that a coach isn't going to change. So like, standard protocol as a freshman, Ben hated it. Like it was terrible. It was miserable. Like, and the world was going to end, like literally. And I mean, what would you say? We probably were on the phone for an hour.
Oh, I was in tears. Like I was a mess, dude.
I mean, you were ready to be out. Like you had your moped packed up. You were trying to come home. Right? I mean, it's like, what's going on here? Like really, like what's going on?
I was ready to take the moped all the way back to Chicago, going 35 the whole way.
For sure. And, you know, through genuine conversation, we figured out it was probably for the best for you to stay, you know, and then obviously, like, you had a great deal of success. But it's wild because so many freshmen go through stuff like that where they're just trying to figure it out. And then literally, though, it was the lowest point that I've ever been a part of with you in life. And I can probably say it's probably top 10 of people that I know, like, because I knew you weren't going to be drunk. Like, you were a freshman, and the only thing that mattered at that point was basketball. Like, you hadn't figured out real life yet where you had to go out and get fucked up and be normal. So, like, at 3 a.m, I'm like, dude, this guy's in a bad, bad place.
that is so true, though. Like, obviously, like, I quote-unquote drank when I was a freshman, but I didn't go out. Like, I didn't – like, you're exactly right. I was a loser who just wanted to do basketball, and it was in shambles. So I would, like, just stay up at 3 a.m. calling you, crying, and wanting to get on my moped and drive away.
But in turn, I mean, if you think about it, if you'd have gotten fucked up and went out and drank like a normal person, part of everyone's freshman year problems as a player is you think about it way too much. You know, like it's in your mind all the time. It actually makes it miserable. It doesn't make it very fun.
No, it sucked.
And it's crazy how that's at every level. Like the high D1, low D1, D2, D3, every freshman goes through with that.
Yeah, and what's wild is like I think the lower you go – the worse it is because reality gets defined for people. And it's just like, wait a minute, I thought I was mid-major. Oh, I thought I was going to be, you know, an NBA player. No, bro, you're going to be lucky to be an all-conference player or play at all. A low-major player, dude, this is it. Like, if I don't play here, I'm never playing again. So, like, that reality starts getting defined sooner and sooner on the lower you are. Because everyone thinks they're a pro. Ben, you can attest to that. Like, every freshman that walks into Wisconsin that you dealt with, they were going to the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the mentality of an 18-year-old.
Well, an 18-year-old at Wisconsin, like...
Well, an 18-year-old at an established program that's going to win, like, Big Ten that program, is your mindset. Yeah. Of course.
What was terrible about it, as a coach, we probably sold every single human being. And I think that's where I think me and you were probably different, Ben, is we formed a relationship based on honesty. You know, like, I didn't recruit you. I was just always real with you. And that was the thing that I probably took on to other kids I recruited from that point forward. It's like, you don't have to sit here and bullshit these kids and sell them like a dream that's really not going to happen. Just be cool with them. Like, get to know them, let them know your story, and then you'll get the best out of all of them.
Well, I think it's beneficial to you, the kid, and to the program. The more you like are real with the kid and are realistic and set expectations the way it's going to be, the better it is for everybody, because now they're like, you're going to get the right type kid to come to your program.
And even if you don't get them, you're better off not getting them because you told them the truth. You know what I'm saying?
I can completely, completely agree with that. I'll never forget. '04, I went MOP at the old Eastern Invitational out in TCNJ with Reebok.
Yeah.
Thought I was on top of the world. Thought I was going to be, hey, maybe this turned. My coach there was an assistant at Canisius, and he said, listen, I'd love to tell you more, but the best I can say is we might be able to offer you a preferred walk-on, and that's not a guarantee. I'm going to get you in contact with some of my D2, D3 friend guys. And it's like, okay, D1 job, D1 dream's over. But it was the most honest thing any coach said. No one fed any bullshit. And since that day, I was like, any coach that can do that, it's it's rare, but it's the way to do it.
And it's good for the kids. It's good for everybody.
Absolutely. You know, what's wild is that a lot of times these guys, or even me when I was coaching, when you're recruiting a kid and you're recruiting them now, you're not developing a relationship with them. You're selling them on stuff.
Yep.
A lot of times you do believe the things that you say. Like, you really in your mind have thought up the fact that, like, this kid, I remember being at Western Michigan, probably the biggest recruit we got there when I was there was Austin Ritchie. He was an Indiana All-Star out of Northern Indiana. And the dude was phenomenal, but I literally was selling him that I thought he could go to the NBA. And in my mind, and when I was young, I really did. I really thought he could go there. But then looking back at it, his size, you know, he was a 6-foot white kid who couldn't jump over a phone book, but he could, like, that dude's not going to the NBA, folks. But at that point in time, as a coach, when I was recruiting him, I really did believe it. So I can't say they're all bullshit lies, but there are a fair share of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I guess the coaches is going through their own learning process as well.
Yeah, no question. What do you think, Ben, in recruiting was like for you? And you went through an interesting situation because you were committed to Iowa, obviously. Coach gets fired. You want to go somewhere else in the league. Like, that had to be a wild experience.
Dude, it was crazy to have to go through the recruiting experience a second time when it was end of March of your senior year of high school. So now you're doing this accelerated recruiting process, and you're just trying to figure out, like, where am I going to go? And then when I try to commit to Bo Ryan in his office, he's telling me that I can't even go there on scholarship, and I'm just a kid trying to figure out who wants to go to school. And then we have to we have to appeal it to a court, and it was absolutely insane. But was your question like what are the things that the coaches sold me on that I believed in, or like from a player's perspective?
I think from a player's perspective, you can tell, I think, just people in general, how to figure out bullshit. You know, like, I always tell this to kids. I'm sure I said it to you. Become the recruiter. Don't get recruited. You know what I mean? Like, if you're being recruited, ask questions. Like, talk to these people. Like, get the answers that you want, not the one they want to give you.
Yeah. But, like, that's such good advice. But the problem is a lot of the people around a lot of these kids just want to hear what they want to hear and don't look at it from that lens.
Yeah.
So they believe what they're being told because – this is their way out for most kids or families or whatever the situation is.
So I guess I could learn this from you. I know as a coach, I'd always build a web around the kid. Okay, so mom and dad or mom or dad, whatever's in his life, is obviously AAU coach. Nowadays, I think high school coaches, and I hate to say this, I think they're really irrelevant in recruiting kids because they just don't spend that much time with them. You know, the AAU coach spends a lot more in the summer just in general. But
yeah, unless you're like prep or something like that.
Yeah, we always call it a champion, like at Xavier, that's their terminology. But there's one person in that kid's life that, like, if you can find them, they're the ultimate decision maker. They're the person they're talking to. So as a player, how did you weed through the bullshit of just the people around you? You know what I mean? Like, you had to have a lot of people trying to jump on that bandwagon and want to give you advice and things like that. Like, how did you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know this for the most part. I mean, I had a coach who had a lot of relationships with coaches already.
Sure.
And you know what, like that just kind of like took over from that aspect. And I think what I did was I did, like, when I was talking to a coach, whether that was you or Brad Stevens or Todd Licklider or whoever that was, like you would just know, as like, you got to trust your gut at the end of the day. If you trust your gut and have at least someone around you that at least puts you in a situation to talk to not 20 coaches, but 10 good ones, then you're going to end up at a decent place. But if you just spread yourself thin and have your dad talk to this person, your brother talk to that person, it's going to be nuts. You need to have some way of controlling who's talking and who's got involvement. And you kind of got to set boundaries as hard as it is. And like I said, the hard part is, it's just so hard to do that because everyone wants a piece of everything.
Yeah. And then as you're growing up, and I'm not saying you get a ton of stuff, but just little things, you know, people that can benefit your life, you're obviously going to let them in that circle to help not make the decision, but at least they think they have that power.
So here's what I want to ask. And I'm sure Riggs is really interested in this too. I mean, everyone is. I just want to know some cool stories that haven't been told, like, that are illegal. We want all the dirt. Like, we want the dirt. Not saying
I'll give you a good story. Okay, so early on in my career, I worked at Fairfield, and you know, I've been very fortunate that I have not been put in any positions for coaches that I've worked for personally that cheat, which has been good for me. But I've been involved in situations where cheating's been asked of. So I'm at Fairfield, and again, I'll just kind of make this more general. We go down to New York City, we're meeting on a kid, and we're meeting with this high school coach, and we're at a diner. And we're sitting there talking, and everything's going great. Like, the kid's supposed to commit, obviously, and come to Fairfield. And all of a sudden, the coach gets out a pen and starts writing on a napkin. And I'm just like, I don't really know what's going on. I don't think Ed knew what was going on. Fold the napkin up and push it over to Cooley. And Cooley opens it up and looks at it and then hands it. Now, mind you, guys, we're at Fairfield, yeah. Connecticut. We're in the MAC, all right? Like, and I'm not talking like the MAAC. Like, this is as low major basketball as possible. Like, you could go to a local YMCA and their locker room is nicer than the ones that our kids were changing in. So that'll tell you like the budget we were working with. Like, my first game in the MAC, we were at Iona, and there was a fucking rat on the floor in the middle of the locker room when we got there. Like, Coming to America type shit, like meager accommodations. That's the MAC. So we're sitting at this diner, and he opens up this napkin and he hands it to me. It says 50,000 cash. You're like, what the fuck is this? And he goes, okay, slide the bank. He goes, listen, first and foremost, I don't know where the fuck you think I'm getting $50,000 cash from. Like, it's definitely not coming out of my pocket. And we're at Fairfield. Like, we don't really, there's no booster that's going to, like, what's going on? And he's like, we're good. And we get up and we walk out, you know? So stories like that. The best though, are you this two weeks from now, the last week of July, if you go to Vegas and just hang out at like the Cosmopolitan, hang out at the Wynn, you'll see more illegal shit. Like, you'll see people putting money out on the table for parents to gamble with. Like, you'll see shit that like would just totally blow you away. And what's even more bizarre is like the people that are looking for it. Like, I forget where I was at, but
keep telling stories and stories and stories without naming people, like person X, yeah, sure. Person Y. This is great. I love this shit.
Oh, so sure. we had a parent get mad at us as a staff. Because one of our assistants was gambling with another family, but they were at the same table gambling. And they had claimed that our assistant was giving them money to gamble with, which was comedy in its own right. But just because the amount of money you're making at the time, no one was giving anyone money. But they were really upset about that. Like, they thought they should be at the table getting money. And the things people will ask you for, like, these people, like, have no shame in their game. Like, they'll ask for, like, a new couch. They'll ask you to tint their windows on their car. You know, like, the stupidest things, like, people think they can get out of college coaches. Like, it's really bizarre.
When you were at Fairfield, did you what the hell is that kid's name? What years were you at Fairfield?
You're talking about the kid from Chicago?
No. I played against a kid who went to Fairfield from Milton Hershey out in Pennsylvania.
What's his name?
I'm trying to remember.
You want me to remember when I played there, but you don't know the fucking kid's name. Like, that's really like a
fair no, when you coached there, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, no, I coached there right when I left Michigan State, so I believe it was 05, 06.
Okay, so it was right
05 before 07.
Then. Okay, yeah, it was a little bit before then. But yeah, I was just curious, because he was a character, and I heard stories about him, so it would not surprise me if one of your stories coincided with this kid.
He had a kid at Fairfield who got a 4.0, and he was selling cocaine on campus. And I remember bringing him in my office. And his name's Rich Fleming, and he's actually dead.
That's
now.
Who he it died, is, Richard really Fleming. Sad.
Yes, he's dead.
Yeah. He ended up from Milton Hershey to Chester to Fairfield.
One of my all-time favorite human beings, barring the selling the drugs part, but like the worst place that I've ever been recruiting in my life is Chester, PA.
Yeah.
So we have to go down. Oh, it's insane. Like, it is. It's bizarrely bad. And everyone knows it. Like, no one's afraid to take it. It's just a complete shithole. So we get this kid to campus, and he's like 6'7", and he's like really talented. Like,
yep. But could step away, had good skill. He could block the shit out of my shot, that's for sure.
But he always wanted to be a gangster. Like, that was a cool thing for him.
Yep.
Because of the Chester, PA, like, environment. And I said to him, I go, Rich, I hate to tell you this, but like, gangsters don't get 4.0s in class. Like, you know, like, that's not what goes on in a college class. And honestly, it's really sad because he ended up passing away. He got shot, robbed and killed back at home, which is too bad. He was a great kid.
That's exactly who I was trying to think of. Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, he was. Like, but again, he just got caught up in all the wrong things, you know. And Fairfield, there's a lot of money on that campus, so that can actually happen pretty easily, which is too bad. But other good recruiting stories, I'm trying to think. My first recruiting memory is pretty good. I was when I was a GA at Michigan State, my job was to fly out to Vegas, and I would drive Coach Izzo around to the games. And obviously, like, Coach Izzo being my idol at the time, it was a nerve-wracking situation because I'm driving this guy around. And, like, I got a navigational system that's telling me how to get places, and he didn't believe in that. So he could tell you, like, which is impressive. He could tell you how to get to any high school in Vegas without a navigational system. Like, for me to get to my fucking hotel to the front door, I need a navigational system half the time. And, like, this dude, oh, that's the wrong way. And it's like, bro, you're not understanding. This thing is getting me here the fastest way possible, asshole. Like, just shut up and, like, just sit there. But we hadn't ate all day. And this dude finally looks at me at, like, 6, and he's like, hey, you got to be hungry. You want to get something? I'm like, yeah. He's like, pulling the 7-Eleven. This dude comes back with a bag of Doritos and 2 Cokes and puts the bag of Doritos between us, and we keep it moving. It's like, what the fuck? Like, that was my introduction to recruiting. It was great, yeah.
Like, you couldn't even get me, like, a gas station pizza.
No. Couldn't stop and eat. Coach is the best. Like, that dude gave me a lot just in a sense of being at Michigan State. He demanded out of me to be a coach. So, like, he would yell at me in front of the team just because that would give me respect, you know? Like, right. It was really bizarre, but it was really cool how he handled this program. You know, he obviously does a great job, but.
Yeah, Izzo stories time. Just keep going. I love it. I want Izzo stories. There's got to be plenty, and I want to hear one where he makes fun of you.
Oh, I mean, that was the making fun of me. Okay, so I'm an AAU coach. I have Drew Knight, so Al Horford on my AAU team. Drew had been committed for 3 years prior. Drew committed as a sophomore at Michigan State, but Al Horford blew up that summer, and I was starting at Michigan State. So my first day, Al Horford commits to Michigan. And obviously, like, Al's on my team. Like, if there's someone that should know what's going on with Al Horford, like, obviously it probably should be me. So we have a full staff meeting, and this is my first day. Like, I hadn't been there more than 4 hours. And when I say a full staff meeting, I mean, like, the secretaries, the strength coach, you know, like, everyone in the staff meeting.
Now, anyone associated.
Yeah, what I didn't know is this is an annual meeting, and I just happened to be there the first day for it. I thought this thing for years was done just because of what happened with me. So he calls this meeting, and we all go in. And again, this is my first meeting, so I don't know where people sit. Like, I don't know what's appropriate. Like, you know, I have no idea. Well, there's the head of the table, and then there's one open seat to the left, like, essentially going to be right to his left. So DJ, one of my guys, like, he's the assistant there. He's like, me and him started the thing. He's like, no, Rick, sit here. You'll be good. So this fucking lunatic comes in with this yellow pad of paper, okay? And I will never forget this in my life. Like, if I'm ever in charge of people, I use yellow pads to this day because of this meeting. Like, I write everything in yellow pads. He sits down. We're in this meeting for probably 9.5 hours, all right? Like, he goes through each person. And the legal pad, like, has shit on it from, like, the year. Like, come to find out the next year, like, I got something that happened, like, I don't know, in July, and we're now talking about it the next June, but he writes all this in a legal pad and just tears people apart. Well, he starts with me, and I'm to his left, right? And obviously, like, this whole Al Horford, Michigan, like, dude, this dude talked to me and motherfucked me for an hour, and I had just gotten there to a point where 9.5 hours later, when I get up to leave, I go into his office, and I ask him if I still had a job. You know, I'm like, I don't want me around anymore, you know, like, I'll just take off. You know, so, like, he was great. Like, but the thing I came to love about him is a lot of it is very calculated. It's not as wild and crazy as you would think. Like, he puts on a show. Like, he knows how to push his guys' buttons at the right times. And I think that's where Coach Izzo is the best. You know, like, he develops great relationships with people, and then he's brutally honest with you. And when I mean brutally, like, I call it defining reality. Like, he has no problem defining reality.
Yeah, with a yellow legal pad.
Yeah, but live in person, like, that's yeah, he's good, man. And he cares about those dudes, so it's not like he's doing it in a bad way. Like, obviously, like, it's a very constructive way to get things done.
How different was it adapting to different coaches? Like, you worked for Izzo, you worked for Cooley, you worked for, was it Haith at, or was it Haith at Missouri?
When yeah, Haith at Missouri, Mac.
Yeah, Mac.
So for me, it was interesting because, like, I was very fortunate because I was a high school coach when I was in college in East Lansing. And the guy that I worked for, Chris Ferguson's dad was on the, or brother is on the board of trustees. So literally I learned to coach by just going to sit at Michigan State practices and watching Tom Izzo interact with his team. So like, even as a high school coach, when I was coming up, I just imitated him the whole, I was like, I tried to be him the whole time. So for me, it's been interesting because the places that I've went to 9 out of 10, or I guess 4 out of 5, they've all wanted me to come there and teach the Michigan State system. The only place that really wasn't like that was Xavier, you know, like, and it was cool for me because I got to learn another system, you know, like, cause they're a, you know, totally different brand of basketball, but I've been fortunate because everyone, again, Cooley, Steve Hawkins at Western Michigan, you know, Frank Paith, even Dave Lato here at DePaul, like I was there and we put in pretty much Michigan State system, you know? So I was a really big part of that because I was just teaching what I learned from Michigan State.
Yeah. What are the major differences or like, I guess what you enjoyed most? Cause I'm assuming the Xavier system is the Skip Prosser system with Mac.
No, Sean Miller.
Oh, he does the Sean Miller. Okay.
Yeah. Which is Thad Matta, the Butler way kind of like what's weird is how similar Butler and Xavier are. I don't think a lot of people would ever think that, but like, from Sean Miller and Chris, and then that, that's all, it's pretty intertwined.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Ben, you were going to say something?
Yeah, and then I just got thinking about how that is intertwined. I was really kind of interested in that. So you're telling me that Mac runs what Miller did, and Miller got that from Thad. Yep. Thad kind of created that from the Butler way. I don't see a lot of the same things I see from Xavier and Butler. Defensively, I was going to say offensively, I don't see it.
I would say watch a Butler-Xavier game, you'll see it. You can definitely see that. I mean, they've mimicked each other since even
it goes deeper because you have, you know, Travis Steele on the staff at Xavier. Well, Travis Steele started at Butler because John Gross was his brother and John worked for Thad. So Trav came up through that system. You know, so like different sets they put in and just – I mean, defensively, obviously, the pack line would probably be the biggest thing.
But how would you? I'm jumping back to Michigan State. You can finish that thought if you want. But how would you describe Michigan State system? I'm gonna do my best to describe it, and you tell me if I'm off or whatever. So first things first, you guys had those nets that were like thin as rails, and if you swished it, the ball would go through the hoop quick, so they could get it out quick. Because your first thing, get it out, go. You have like three like secondary or fast break, secondary fast break things. You got a dribble handoff on the left side where someone's coming. You got a pin down on the right side while the dribble handoff's coming. You also have like just a ton of shit on the fast break.
Yep.
You got set plays beyond set plays. I could still probably name all of them. You got pump, pumps where the guard. There's two guards up top. They pass. He runs around a double screen on the right side and either can come back on a double or go off on a single. It's fast break, all sets. And is there a defensive philosophy other than to chuck the shit out of everyone that runs through the lane and be brutal as fuck?
So, yes, there is a defensive philosophy. It's pack line. You know, but the only difference between, I would say, Michigan State's pack line and the true pack line, because I had to learn it when I was at Xavier, Coach Izzo doesn't believe in influencing, like, you can't get beat baseline, you know, like, and the other thing that was really interesting to me about Coach Izzo from other places that I've been, we didn't teach a lot of details in a sense of, like, this is how you close out, or this is, like, how you guard, meaning this foot's supposed to move first. It was all effort-based. It's like, no, get your fucking ass there. Don't let him shoot and stay in front of the ball. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that. I love that a lot.
We jump to the ball, like, so we were always in our gaps.
It's not like, hey, when you jump to the ball, you have to do this. No, I don't care what you do. Just get your ass to the center of the lane. Like, I love that.
There was no, like, move this foot first. He didn't care. Like, everything's effort-based. You know what I mean? Especially defensively. And then, honestly, it is toughness and rebounding. Like, that's what he made his calling on, is literally, like, the war drill, people can't understand. Like, you see videos of it all the time of, like, once a year he'll get out football pads. But, like, that's some real shit. Like, that drill is – it really makes who all those kids are, and it's relentless. Like, there's no rules. It's 5-on-5 box out. It's not difficult. There's a guy in each corner, a guy in each wing, a guy up top, and our coach shoots the ball. And if the coach makes it, Tom Izzo motherfucks him, right? Like, you got to miss. And it's like, it's nerve-wracking for everyone involved. But you crash the boards, and obviously you box out, and there's no rules. So all those dudes know how to rebound, and in turn, they all know how to run.
Was it a requirement? I'm thinking back of the Michigan State point guards, especially in recent history. Does Izzo, or was there a purpose to recruit point guards who could really score? Because looking back at who they had, it just kind of hit me. All their point guards could just go get their own while also facilitating the offense.
Yeah, while also running the show. Yeah.
Which is very important because we don't have a continuity. Right. So it isn't like you run a set and it flows into this. So a lot of times, a lot of things they run will end up with a side pick and roll with a triangle on the weak side, right? Well, that side pick and roll is normally with the point, but that dude has to be the guy that can break a playoff and just go score, because there isn't a free flowing, now we get to this guy. That isn't there. That's not who he is.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
So at the end of the day, you'd have to pull it out.
Yeah, I was just thinking Valentine's, Appling's. I mean, even back to like the Mateen Cleaves days, like it was a point guard that.
But Kalen Lucas, Neitzel.
I mean, Neitzel, yeah. Corey Lucius, if he had to play on the ball.
But the thing you got to give Coach Izzo a ton of credit for is a lot of those guys you just named weren't recruited to be point guards.
Right, right.
You know, like putting Denzel at the one is something that I think everyone thought he could do when you recruited him, but that was probably his natural position. You know what I mean? Allen Anderson for us, my years there, yeah. Like Allen Anderson was 6'7", 6'8". Like we would play him on the ball when Drew Neitzel would get into foul trouble. Like, you know, like that would be our backup point guard. So he does have a tendency of finding guys that can play that position and molds them into that. More than anything, the whole program is based around being able to communicate and be honest with people. Okay. So a point guard has to be able to do that. And that's the thing that he holds you accountable to a standard of that's just sick.
Yeah. And like, this is so refreshing to hear. And obviously I'm sure you root for Michigan State just from a distance and, you know, from where you grew up and being a part of the program a little bit, but I'm sure a lot of people hear me talk about Wisconsin and the program. It's like, there is no, it is a coincidence. It's a coincidence that a lot of the things that I say and a lot of things that you say, there's a method to a madness, and I can just look at other programs from afar, and I can just know – I don't know what they're doing day to day, but it's not something like where it's like, oh, I know that coach is doing something where it's setting the guys up for this because look at how they progressed and look at how they stick to these rules. Whether the rule is X or Y, like there is something consistent between programs that consistently rise to the top, and you're just saying a lot of things are like, yep, I see it. Yep, makes sense. Whereas if you were to talk about a program like, I don't know, Penn State, and I like Pat Chambers, but like I look at what he's doing, it's all a bunch of shit. It's all a bunch of bullshit hype stuff.
It's wild because at the end of the day, it all comes down to who's in charge of that program, right? That leadership, the CEO of the program. And you can go to any major business. It's the same way. That's the people that have success. It's the people that are organized and everyone knows the game plan. So whether it's right or wrong, as long as everyone's doing the same thing, it makes it right. You know, like
– correct.
I mean, there's more than anything, I guess, the most successful group of people at it is the United States military. You know, like they're all on the same page all the time. And if not, people fucking die.
Right.
You know, so like programs that are ran that way, as much as some of the players might not like it, at the end of the day, that's still what's best for everyone involved.
See, and I got to share this because you got on the military thing. Is Izzo like a military type guy? Does he make references to that shit?
Not at all. No.
No. Okay.
No.
And that's fine. But Bo did one time in a film session. It was hysterical. So we're going over film and he motherfucks Jared Bergen, this is, and Jared missed a help or something. And he literally equated it to war. He went on a 2-week phase where everything we did in film was about like war. And if you didn't do this, he like goes, Jared, if this was war, Josh would be dead. And we're like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, this isn't war, first off. But we laugh at that, but we also, like, it makes sense. You can, like, compute it in your head, like, yeah, he's right. If I did rotate, Josh's guy wouldn't have scored. Therefore, Josh wouldn't be dead in those terms.
Yeah, but it's honestly, like, as a coach, bringing in, like, Navy SEAL guy. Like, when I got to Xavier, my first day there, we brought in a group of Navy SEALs. It's this place called The Program. And they bring two guys in, and they put your team through these – I guess team building exercises, but literally like these dudes are Navy SEALs now. Like they act like Navy SEAL drill sergeants. Like But at the end of the whole thing, they do a debriefing, and the dude came to us and was like, okay, you're trying to make this guy your leader, and he has zero opportunity of doing it. Like, you're going to lose. Like, if we were in the military, I would tell you that this whole platoon would die. So you probably don't want to have him do that. But this guy who you don't value or you don't think can be a leader is the dude that everyone really listens to. Because obviously in the military, these people are trained to do that, like, or people die. So I know as a coach, bringing in the military people is awesome. I don't necessarily know if you can run a program that way. Obviously, you'd probably get fired. But there are similarities, I think. Just people don't die. People get fired.
I'm just saying the thought process of a lot of the successful coaches is a lot of the same thing. It's just done a little bit differently, and there's definitely a correlation between the teams that are successful and how the programs are run.
And go higher. I mean, in the NBA, the Spurs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even the Boston Celtics, like, Danny Ainge figured it out. Like, he has a system in drafting, you know? Like, those teams are going to be successful. They're not going to get into lulls like the Lakers are right now. You know, I don't see that happening with those organizations.
All right, Riggs, you got anything else for my man here?
Yeah,
Keep it rolling. I mean,
That came up that a lot of people were curious about, and you hear it more and more, especially this day and age, with everyone has a scouting service. Everyone has rankings.
Yep.
When you're recruiting, how much does that get referenced from both sides? From your side, do you play to the, oh, you're the number X,
yeah,
X recruit? And then from their side going, wait a minute, I'm the number, you know, 24 recruit. I should be doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah, I mean, I think what that is more than anything for us as college coaches was a starting point. You know, like, you knew, okay, you got a top 100 kid. When I was at Western Michigan in Fairfield, there was no reason for me to watch that kid.
Right.
You know, or if I'm at a high major school, that's a good place to start, you know. And I think that's what it's used for more than anything. The problem with rankings and scouting services is they're just as biased as we are as people. So they'll have programs that, you know, they're closer to. So when those kids commit there, they end up getting ranked in the top 100. You know what I mean? Like, I think VCU last year had their whole starting – the whole class was in the top 100 or four of the five or whatever. Well, that's because they had a relationship with this scouting service. You know, like, no, those kids aren't that good. So I think that kind of stuff is really biased as well too. But it's a good – it's a starting point. It's a reference point for coaches. And, again, it starts to formulate who you can recruit and who you can't.
So that's kind of – you just use as your starting point. Did you ever have that come up when you're recruiting a kid where he used that to, I guess – try to create leverage?
I mean, that wouldn't create leverage for them. You know what I mean? I don't think it's more, I mean, the thing I would bring up is like what I just said, I have a relationship with so-and-so at this place. Like, you're going to move up rankings, you know, like,
sure.
And then when it happened, the dude thought he could really trust you more because again, you can make that happen.
Right.
So I think that's probably more of an indicator than anything, but again, it's such bullshit, you know? Like, you got Kyle Guy, I think, who ended up getting ranked in the top 50 in most scouting services. He was a McDonald's All-American. You know, so, like, I think a lot of that stuff is just – some of them are really good, and as a coach, you find the guys that you really like and can trust their evaluation. I don't think the number itself matters, if that makes sense. But I know, again, as a coach, there were certain guys that I knew I could call and get, hey, who is a sleeper out there? Or – hey, is this kid really that good? And he saw him play, and he was going to give me a good report. Where there's other people that you knew that it was just like, okay, I'm giving this guy $500 for no reason. Like, this right. is bullshit. It's just to get phone numbers.
Did you ever have to deal with again, you hear this more and more now, the package deal?
No, I mean, we were always trying to create the package.
You try to create
it. You know,
it.
As coaches – again, as a coach, you're trying to find every advantage possible
right.
to get that kid to want to come to your school. I mean – and you learn the best coaches in college basketball know the NCAA rules better than anyone else because then they know how to get around them. They know how to dance in the gray area. You know what I mean? Where it's like you're finding a way to get the kid's girlfriend into school and it's not illegal. You know what I mean? Like she applies like a normal student, like, but she gets into the school. Like, well, that's going to help you get the kid. Like things like that. Like there's different things that you try to connect dots with.
Are you saying you've had to do that?
I mean, Ben, the amount of things that you have to do as a college assistant to try to get an advantage is insane.
Well, no, I wouldn't blame you. I was curious, like, if that's something you've had to do is, like, get somebody's
girlfriend
in. So,
essentially, I want you to think about this. what we are at the end of the day as an assistant or even as a head coach, you have 18-year-old kids trying to find a place to go, and you basically have to make everything seem great in a situation that 9 out of 10 times isn't great. So they have, oh, yeah, I'd love it if my girlfriend could go to school there. Well, you could hear that on one call, and good recruiters write that down and find a way to make that happen by the next conversation or two. Hey, man, remember you're talking about your girlfriend getting in here. What? Why don't you have her apply to this school? I heard it's easier to get in that way. But what that dude doesn't know is you had to do 12 hours of research to try to find out that information. But it can be something that dumb that builds that relationship that much stronger. And that isn't a bad thing. You know what I mean? I think that's more of a good thing.
Yeah, it's almost like used car salesman-ish.
Yeah, fuck off. I mean, it's not like I'm changing out the transmission, you know, like, just to get you to buy the car. Like, these actual things happen.
No, I know. I hear you. I just wanted to give you a little shit.
But yes, I have. To let you know, I have gotten a kid's girlfriend.
And like, but if you were a good person, Rick, you wouldn't do that because you should know that the kid doesn't want to have a girlfriend to go into his freshman year of college.
Yeah, never go to college with a girlfriend.
And I did. And I did. Yeah. You didn't help me figure out not to do that.
That's not true. That is not true. Like, I'm sure.
No, I'm sure you probably told me, what are you doing, you idiot?
You should have went to Western Michigan then, Ben.
Oh, gosh. Wisconsin. The amount of, your freshman year, I'm sure the things that you missed out on.
Thanks for rubbing it in right now, you dick.
But at the end of the day, did it not pay off? Like,
no, it totally paid off. And you know what the best part is? I think I take full advantage of it now that I'm out. You know what I mean? It's almost like I'm paying it back. So the time that I missed out freshman year, anytime I'm back with like buddies or whatever and we go out, all the things I missed out on freshman year, it's like I would just relive it.
Well, and then the other thing that
Which could be looked at as like a really, really lame thing to do, or it could just be looked at as a really, really awesome thing to do.
Well, no, but the other thing is you have an experience that people want to hear about that you had to sacrifice to have for those 4 years. Like you didn't get to be normal. And now going out and kind of sharing that with other people gives you opportunities to celebrate, you know, and have a good time.
No, there's definitely a balance, but no, I completely agree. Like I'd be lying if I said that, like when I went back to a bunch of football games last year, that I didn't get – I probably was more shit-faced at football games last year than I was in college because I wasn't thinking about lift the next morning or whatever it was basketball-wise. And that's a good thing in my opinion. I think it's okay. I think it's healthy in a way.
It's weird.
And it means I did it the right way while I was there.
Well, and a lot of people now are – like the big thing is how many hours student-athletes can, you know, participate. Like they're going to try to make them shorter. They need more breaks. But the thing that I would say, again, from my brief experience coaching college basketball and, like, even talking to guys that are like you, you learn time management. Like, you learn to be a better adult. You know, like, you learn to be able to make a tough decision. Like, no, if I go out and get fucked up, the next day is going to be terrible. Like, I'm not going to be able to do the things I need to do. So, like, you're much more equipped for life.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree on there. But
so I'm gonna give you my final Ben Brush story, and this is no lie. So you asked me, like, the things about you that I keep, you know, brag about, things of that nature. The most rewarding experience for me
I didn't say to brag about, so don't put this one on me if you're going to brag about me.
No, this is a good one. The most rewarding thing for me in coaching, and this is no lie, no bullshit, I've coached obviously a lot of kids, I've mentored a lot of people, was you called me right before the Final Four. Like, the game was going to be played in, like, 4 hours. And, like, I was one of the phone calls that you made. And we talked for, like, 30 minutes about, like, weird, like, I don't want to say game planning, but, like, again, I had been in the Final Four before, things like that. And for me, like, that was the ultimate, like, form of respect. It's like, yeah, I never coached this kid. I've only recruited this kid. But we built this relationship that, and it arguably at the most important time in your life up to that point, you thought about me and you called me. So, like, for that, I thank you because you really did make coaching rewarding and cool.
That's pretty sweet, though. I mean, like, and that's why, like, I love the relationship we have was – you could have easily been like, hey, yeah, Ben, nice to meet you when you called me. Hey, I'm not going to be able to get you to come to Western Michigan, but just want to say I enjoyed watching you play, best of luck. You do what makes you ultimately a really, really good assistant. Unfortunate circumstances, and now we're just like kind of like rubbing each other's dicks for a second. Unfortunate circumstances at DePaul and everything. Like, I know you're going to land on your feet, and it's all good. And I think we should get Rick back down to Cincinnati to Queen City Exchange
for I'm in.
Have you been there before?
No, honestly, we should go down there and do another podcast. We should do a Cincinnati Live podcast. Great city.
Well, yeah, the
good news, we are doing the season.
Yeah, we are.
So there's a new bar there's a new bar that opened up probably about 6 months ago, right in like over the Rhine downtown area, called Queen City Exchange. That's a stock market bar during the day until 9 o'clock. Yeah. So prices fluctuate every 5 minutes based on what people are ordering.
There was a place like that at Western Michigan. It was called the Beer Exchange. Same concept. And the market will crash.
Yep.
Everything will be like 5 cents and you just get fucking wrecked.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Awesome. Like a great time.
Yeah, they're having us on. So they're having us there when season kicks off to do a live show there and then just get blasted watching basketball because they have great TV setup.
Yeah, well, I'll be out for the year for coaching, so I'd love to come down and be a guest if you need him.
Absolutely.
Perfect. All right, man. I think that is it for the episode 16. I think we can close her out right here. Riggs, I'm going to get the Twitter handle right because you don't.
Nope.
Follow us on Twitter, Fundamentally SD. I've been posting a little bit more on Instagram. We also are Fundamentally SD right there. Social media is kicking up. More guests coming on. Good show material coming up here with the season getting closer. We're almost there. We're almost at the point where we can start doing preseason rankings and get into a little bit more of predictions like we've been doing for the NBA prematurely. So we're getting there. I'm pretty excited. Rick, thank you for coming on. Riggs, a pleasure as always. And Reeves, if I missed anything, fill me in now. If not, forever hold your peace, and that's Fundamentally SD.